I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, romanoz.com.au.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, first of all, I'm going to be catching up with John Whitehead. Now, he's the president of the Man from Snowy River Museum in Corryong.
That sounds exciting.
I love the Man from Snowy River, Banjo Patterson. And then?
And then I'm going to catch up with Wendy Colleen from the Stanton and Colleen Winery.
Oh, winery. I know how much you love your wine, Lynn. And then straight after that, I'll be talking with Michael McGyver. Now, he is the owner and his family. They own the Broken Hill Tourist Park in Broken Hill.
Yes. And then we're going to head out to Silverton and see John Dinan, who's a local artist.
Oh, Dino. Dino to his friends.
Yes, that's correct.
Sounds like an interesting program, Lynn.
Now, apart from all of this, the world.
Yes. And apart from this, we're also going to play a great selection of music
as selected by the people we interview.
So what do you think, Lynn?
On with the show.
Oh, welcome back, listeners. I'm Phil C, and yes, we're still roaming Oz. I'm actually in Corryong with John Whitehead at the Man from Snowy River Museum. How are you this morning, John?
Okay.
Hey, look, I've got to tell you, you're a 90-year-old gentleman, and you're looking very sprightly for your age. How long have you been with the museum?
How long have I been with it? Well, I was president for 31 years and I put in several years before that.
Okay, and I understand you've only just stepped down to vice president about a month ago.
Yes.
Okay, well that's fantastic that you've put so much time into something so wonderful. Tell us a few things for the listeners about this wonderful museum of yours here in Corryong.
Yes, as you walk in, we're the Man from Snowy River Museum.
Mm-hmm.
We have some of Jack Riley's regalia, his saddlebag and watch,
yes,
etc. That's the first thing you see when you come through the door.
Okay.
And then we turn and there is Jim Simpson's rug.
Now tell us about that rug, Jim, because that's, John, because that is really impressive, that rug. Tell us a little bit about that, the history of that.
Well, it's a 6-foot square map of Australia, knitted by Jim when he was a prisoner of war in Stalag 4B in Germany.
Right.
And knitted from memory because I don't think the Germans would have had a map for him.
Definitely not, unless they were going to use it against us. So he knitted this magnificent rug whilst he was a prisoner of war. How long would it have taken him to make that, do you think? Because it's a huge rug.
Yeah, well, I believe it took him about 18 months to gather all the bits of wool together. Some of them were only about a foot long, and if they were too worn, he'd roll two or three together to get the fly he wanted.
Right.
And served for colours.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the coats of arms of each state on it too.
Yes.
And very thankful to a Canadian chap that was shot down, he had new hockey socks on and had all the colours he wanted in them, and he gave him about 50 cigarettes and knitted him another pair of socks to get those for the colours.
Fantastic. And the thing is, it's so intricate in its detail. He's even got the mountain ranges and he's got the reef on this rug.
Yes, and he didn't forget Tassie.
No, he didn't. He didn't forget Tasmania as well. All the little islands out off Tasmania.
Yes.
He's even got those on there.
He even got a little red dot on it for Corryong, and Lake Eyre was full of water too, by the look of it.
Okay. Now, I understand that they wanted to steal this rug and take it to Canberra. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, it's got a story of its own, that rug.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the rug.
Right from the start.
Yep.
Yeah, well, when the Russians released them from the prisoner of war camp,
mm-hmm,
they had to, they just opened the gates and let them go, and they had to work their own way across Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Jim was actually out of camp when the Russians got there because the Germans had left.
Yes.
But taken all the tucker with them.
Right.
So he was out trying to scrounge something for them to eat.
Okay.
One of his mates grabbed the blanket and then gave it to him when he caught up to them down the track.
Okay.
When they got to the river where the Americans were on the other side, the Russian guards and the American guards weren't letting anyone across the river.
Right.
The Russian guard said to the Americans, he said, "I know these men."
Right, yeah.
He said, "I was in the prison camp next to them, and whenever we ran out of food, they gave us food. Let them through."
Okay. Okay, now I understand. Now, that was great. They let him through. And I also understand that when they were ready to fly them back home, he wasn't going to leave without his rug. Is that correct?
That's right.
So he said, "If I can't take my rug, I'm not going. I'm going to walk."
Yeah, going to keep walking.
Okay. And they obviously took him because he's still got his rug and it's here at this beautiful Man from Snowy River Museum.
And the American let him take the rug on the train plane because his wife was a knitter and Jim had to take it.
Okay, fantastic. Now, what else can our listeners expect to see here at the museum? You've got, I understand, out the back, you're working on an actual replica of the original Man from Snowy River Hut.
Yes. We have photos taken in about 1904 with Jack Riley at the door of his hut, so we've been able to scale the hut from that.
Yes.
And yes, we're using all traditional equipment.
That was the thing that amazed me. Traditional equipment, and it's all done by volunteers. Yes, it's not quite finished yet, but no, hopefully you're going to have that done very soon.
No, well, we've been splitting some of the shingles and that during some of the festivals, and that creates a lot of interest.
Okay.
With the visitors too.
Okay.
To see the shingle splitters.
Now, what else can we see? Like, where are we standing right now in this particular room? What's the display here, John?
Display here is all cameras, going right back to the old glass plate cameras.
Okay.
And bit of sporting equipment. Here's hospital section here.
Mm-hmm.
Including a few things that people really take one look out and walk past. They bring back memories.
Okay. Yeah. So horror stories for some, I suppose. I can see we've got an original dental chair over there, Dr. George.
Yeah. And the old-fashioned drill.
Yes, I'm not a fan of dentistry, so come here and if you have some flashbacks, we're not trying to scare you about the museum.
No, just through the door there is a ski.
Some ski equipment, yeah, there's a whole section of that.
A whole collection of skis.
Uh-huh.
Here, some years ago, we were approached, would we let them send our ski collection to an exhibition in New Orleans in America.
Right.
We said, no, we don't do that sort of thing here.
Yep.
A couple of days later, we get a phone call from Canberra. This is Bob Hawke talking.
Okay.
We want those skis to go to America.
Right.
So what else could you do?
Exactly. What could you say to the man?
So we sent half the skis to America, the left ones only, not the right ones.
Okay, okay.
So, and they all came back.
They all came back. That was very clever planning there on your behalf, no doubt, John.
Yeah.
So is there anything else of interest here that you think that the listeners might like to come and see? You've got some magnificent, magnificent things here, really impressive.
Oh, yes, well, in the shed out the back we have all the old printing equipment that our local paper was printed on up until about 20 years ago.
Right.
And I don't know how heavy that press is, but a 20-tonne jack will just lift one end of it at a time.
Okay.
It happens to be in our shed.
That's it, in your shed. And you've also got a section there of uniforms from some of the local lads that gave their lives or that passed later on in life when they come back from the war, actual uniforms. And
yes, well, one is Air Commodore Gearing, and that's about as high as you can get.
That's it. That's it. Yes. All right, John. Well, I think that's just about covered it for our listeners. I really appreciate your time.
And also up in the shed, there's a lot of all the old hand tools, axes, adzes, hand saws.
Okay.
and all that sort of stuff.
That sort of stuff they would have used to build their huts and cottages. And
farm machinery.
Farming machinery. So, listeners, there's a lot to see here. I must tell you, I've seen a lot of museums in small towns. This one's extremely impressive, John. And I've got to thank you for taking so much time to talk with us. That rug in itself, in that glass cabinet, if you're interested in anything like that, war memorabilia, this is definitely a place to not miss when you come through Corryong. Now, I'm going to play you a song, John. Have you got anything special that comes to mind?
Oh,
it's got to be Australian.
How about Slim Dusty and the Man from Snowy River?
Ah, good on you, John. You're a man of my heart. All right, listeners, you stay around for The Man from Snowy River by Slim Dusty. And thank you so much, John Whitehead, and he's the Vice President here at the Man from Snowy River Museum here in Corryong. And we're going to be back with more Roman Oz straight after Slim Dusty.
There was movement at the station, for the word had passed around that the colt from Old Regret had got away and had joined the Wild Bush Horses. He was worth £1,000. So all the cracks had gathered to the fray. All the tried and noted riders from the stations near and far had mustered at the homestead overnight. For the bushmen love hard riding where the Wild Bush Horses are, and the stock horse snuffs the battle with delight. There was Harrison, who made his pile when Pardon won the cup, and the old man with his hair as white as snow. But few could ride beside him when his blood was fairly up. He would go wherever horse or man could go. And Clancy of the Overflow came down to lend a hand. No better horseman ever held the reins. For never horse could throw him while the saddle girths would stand. And he learned to ride while droving on the plains. And one was there, a stripling, on a small and weedy beast. He was something like a racehorse undersized, with a touch of time or pony, three parts thoroughbred at least, and such as are by mountain horsemen prized. He was hard and tough and wiry, just the sort that won't say die. There was courage in his quick, impatient tread, and he bore the badge of gameness in his bright and fiery eye, and the proud and lofty carriage of his head. But still so slight and weedy, one would doubt his power to stay. And the old man said, that horse will never do. For a long and tiring gallop, lad, you'd better stop away. Those hills are far too rough for such as you. So he waited sad and wistful, lonely Clancy stood his friend. Oh, I think we ought to let him come, he said. And I warrant he'll be with us when he's wanted at the end. For both his horse and he a mountain bred. Oh, he hails from Snowy River, up by Kosciuszko's side, where the hills are twice as steep and twice as rough, where a horse's hooves strike firelight from the flintstones every stride, and the man that holds his own is good enough. And the Snowy River riders on the mountains make their home, where the river runs those giant hills between. I have seen full many horsemen since I first commenced to roam, but no way yet such horsemen have I seen. So he went, they found the horses by the big mimosa clump. They raced away towards the mountain's brow. And the old man gave his orders, boys, go at 'em from the jump. No use to try for fancy riding now. And Clancy, you must wheel them, try and wheel them to the right, and ride boldly, lad, and never fear the spills. For never yet was rider that could keep that mob in sight if once they gained the shelter of those hills. So Clancy rode to wheel them. He was racing on the wing, where the best and boldest riders take their place. And he raced his stock horse past them, and he made the rangers ring with his stock whip as he met them face to face. Then they halted for a moment while he swung the dreaded lash, but they saw their well-beloved mountain full in view. And they charged beneath the stock whip with a sharp and sudden dash, and off into the mountain scrub they flew. Then fast the horsemen followed where the gorges deep and black resounded to the thunder of their tread. And the stockwhips woke the echoes and they fiercely answered back from cliffs and crags that beetled overhead. And upward, ever upward, the wild horses held their way where Currajong and Mountain Ash grew wide. And the old man muttered fiercely, "We may bid the mob good day. No man could hold them down the other side." When they reached the mountain summit, even Clancy took a pull. It well might make the boldest hold their breath. The wild hop scrub grew thickly and the hidden ground was full of wombat holes, and any slip was death. But the man from Snowy River let the pony have his head, and he swung his stock whip round and gave a cheer. And he raced him down the mountain like a torrent down its bed, while the others stood and watched in very fear. He sent the flintstones flying, but the pony kept his feet. Oh, he cleared the fallen timber in his stride. And the man from Snowy River never shifted in his seat. It was grand to see that mountain horseman ride. Through the stringy box and saplings on the rough and broken ground, down the hillside at a racing pace he went. And he never drew the bridle till he landed safe and sound at the bottom of the terrible descent. He was right among the horses as they climbed the farther hill, and the watchers on the mountain standing mute saw him ply the stock whip fiercely. He was right among them still as he raced across the clearing in pursuit. Then they lost him for a moment where two mountain gullies met in the ranges. Oh, but a final glimpse reveals on a dim and distant hillside the wild horses racing yet, with the man from Snowy River at their heels. And he ran them single-handed till their sides were white with foam. He followed like a bloodhound on their track till they halted cowed and beaten. Then he turned their heads for home, and alone and unassisted brought them back. But his hardy mountain pony, he could scarcely raise a trot. He was blood from hip to shoulder from the spur. But his pluck was still undaunted and his courage fiery hot, for never yet was mountain horse a cur. And down by Kosciuszko, where the pine-clad ridges raise their torn and rugged battlements on high, where the air is clear as crystal and the white stars fairly blaze at midnight in the cold and frosty sky, and where around the overflow the reed beds sweep and sway to the breezes and the rolling plains are wide. Oh, the man from Snowy River is a household word today, and stockmen tell the story of his ride. And stockmen tell the story of his ride. And stockmen tell the story of his ride. And stockmen tell the story of his ride.
Oh, welcome back, listeners. I'm Phil C, and we are still roaming Oz. And Lenny, where are we going today? Who are we with?
We are visiting Stanton and Colleen, a winery in Rother Glen, which is in northeast Victoria, and we're with Wendy, the owner. How are you today, Wendy?
I'm very well, thank you, Lynn.
That's good. Now, for our listeners, when did Stanton and Colleen all begin?
We first planted grapes in 1875,
yes.
And so that makes us 146 years old.
Wow.
And another exciting fact about our company at the moment is our oldest vineyard turns 100 this year.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And I believe that's seven generations,
yes,
of the family.
My daughter is the seventh generation of our family. We're Killeens, and the original owners were Stantons. And back in 1948, a Stanton married a Killeen. So we've enjoyed continuous family business since 1875.
And what, all the everyone has sort of been a vineyard?
Yes. We've made wine since 1875, and people say, "Well, how can you be so old in Australia?"
Yeah.
I mean, we're not that old as a modern nation, and it's because the wine industry is very male dominated, or has been for mm-hmm. many generations. Yes. Not so much now, but I guess in the early days, I suppose in the first four or five generations, the wineries, the business was left to the son, the oldest son.
Yep.
So that's why we're here in business today. My daughter is in her early 30s, and we run the business together now. Mm-hmm. It's the first time in the family's history that women have been in charge. Yes.
Oh, wow, that's exciting. It's good to see.
Yes, yes.
It's very good to see. And so what, she studied winemaking, or has she just picked it up
No, we're more business owners, managers.
Yep. Right,
we employ winemakers and vineyard managers, and we're a team of 10. So, yes, we're really the owners, but we're learning. So it's been in our family all these years, and we've picked it up over the years, but we're certainly not technically trained.
Right, okay. So you have award-winning Tokays and Muscats.
Yes,
and
Port.
And Port.
We're very lucky here in Rutherglen because we have a warm climate, and mm-hmm. we're able to grow many different grapes.
Yep.
So in our vineyard alone, we have 14 different varieties. Mm-hmm. So we make sparkling wine, we make white wine, mm-hmm. we make red wine, mm-hmm. and we make fortified wine, which of course is the Muscats, Tokays, which we now call Topaque, and Port.
Yes, oh lovely. And I did notice when I was doing a little bit of research, you do a white port.
We do, we do. And of course, white port is very traditional in Portugal.
Yes.
And our point of difference in the wine industry in Rutherglen is we have a number of Portuguese port varieties.
Yes.
We planted those in the late 1980s, early 90s to make vintage port.
Mm-hmm.
And after Chris's death in 2007, we decided to honour him by making a table wine, first time ever, with the Portuguese port varieties.
Oh.
And since then, we now make six different table wines with the beautiful port varieties.
Oh, that would be nice.
And they're lovely. So we make from a sparkling Tempranillo, which in our vineyard it's called Tinto Roriz, which is Portuguese.
Yep.
We make rosé, we make a number of different reds and port.
Mm-hmm. Oh, lovely. Mm. Okay, and also you have a barrel club. What is that, and what do you need to do?
Okay.
It sounds interesting.
Well, in our cellar, out the back here where we're sitting today, we have more than 500,000 litres of fortified wine maturing in barrels and casks. And, and we make a lot of blending port, musket and topaque, and we sell a lot of personalised barrels. So people can come in here and buy handmade 5-litre, 10-litre, 15-litre or 20-litre barrels, and we supply the wine.
Oh,
and when you buy that barrel, you join our club. It's free, and we help you through your port or your barrel journey.
Oh,
so
okay.
Each year, so you can bring a sample back, and we can test it for you, make sure that it's all fresh, and you can top up, and we support you with your beautiful barrel. For a number of years.
So you take your barrel home.
You take your barrel home,
right?
Because in this day and age, people have everything. A lot of people have everything, and we find that people love these port barrels, or they're fortified wine barrels, because it's something that grows with you, and the wine matures over years, and you can top up.
Yes,
and it's a point of difference at home too.
Yes, I remember my first experience with a wine barrel. Didn't realise that you had to pour water in it to make it stretch, and of course, you know, everything just went through.
We actually season them. So when you buy a barrel from us, they've been seasoned and tightened, and you know, all the wood characters leached out.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Now, you do cellar doors?
We have a beautiful cellar door, yes, and we have a very busy cellar door because Rutherglen is quite a tourist destination.
Yes.
A lot of wine tourism here. There's just over 20 wineries in Rutherglen, and there are 19 members of the winemakers of Rutherglen, and there are some smaller independent wineries that we support as well.
Oh, okay.
We do have a cellar door, yes. And we have a number of wines on tasting, and we have very friendly staff, and we have a beautiful ground surrounding our cellar door.
Yes, it's a lovely area.
So it's a great place to come and have a picnic or come and taste wine, and we do tours as well.
And you do tours. Okay, and your hours of operation?
hours of operation? Well, of course, it's we're sort of back to normal. We were shut, and then we had limited hours when we originally opened after COVID lockdown. Yeah. Our hours are 9 till 5 each day. Sundays at 10 till 5.
Wow! So you can come here for a nice afternoon, sitting out in this beautiful greenery and grounds. And do you do platters or anything?
Yes, tasting platters? Yes, we do. We do either build your own platter or we order beautiful platters from a terrific chef in Rutherglen called Kate, who owns Savoy Truffle.
Oh,
and she's actually catering today for us for Taste of Rutherglen.
Right, and what's Taste of Rutherglen?
Taste of Rutherglen is a WAMEX Rutherglen initiative that started many, many years ago.
Yep.
Always held on the March Victorian Long Weekend, March Long Weekend. And it's a showcase of food and wine matching.
Lovely.
And everybody's got music, all the wineries have music, and we have food. And here at Stanton and Killeen, we have games for the children.
Yes.
We have music. There's bean bags to lounge around on the lawn.
Wonderful. And so you're expecting a huge crowd.
Yes, we are. Yes? We're hoping.
Oh, very good. Okay, well, that sounds like an exciting place to visit. To end off the interview, what song, Aussie song, would you like to hear?
Well, the first Aussie song that has popped into my head is Men at Work, Land Down Under.
Wonderful.
Heard it on the radio the other day. Okay, so that's so Australian.
We should have that song, Phil?
Definitely, most definitely. We've got that. We've got all the Australian songs, you know that. And it is a popular song.
Yes.
Thank you so much for selecting that, Wendy. That's going to be great.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you so much for your time.
Yes.
Thank you. Oh, thank you for the opportunity.
No.
And we welcome anybody to our cellar door.
Yes.
Wonderful. Is there a charge for the cellar door, incidentally, or not?
Yes. We've introduced most of the wineries in Victoria now have introduced a tasting fee.
Okay.
So in the past it's been free.
Logical.
But we certainly have only recently introduced a tasting fee, which is only sensible, really.
Mm. Absolutely. Yes. No, I can understand that.
No, I can too. Well, wonderful. Well, let's get this song underway. And thank you so much again, Wendy, for your
time. You're welcome.
And let's hope Taste of Rutherglen goes really well.
Thank you very much.
Stick around, listeners. Men at Work, Land Down Under, and we'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after that.
Oh, hello, listeners. Phil C here again, and I'm in Broken Hill with Michael MacGyver, and he is the owner of the Broken Hill Tourist Van Park. How you going, Michael?
Yeah, really well. Thanks, Phil. Welcome to Broken Hill.
Oh, my friend, there is so much to see and do here in Broken Hill.
There is heaps to see in Broken Hill.
I've got to tell you, yeah, this caravan park of yours, I've been here a couple of years before, and it is brilliant. It's a lovely place.
Yeah.
And I had to come back. Tell us, this is a family-owned business. How long have you had this park?
Yeah, look, it's a mum and dad and I run the park with an amazing team here in Broken Hill. Yep. So we're very fortunate. We've had the park since April 2010. So originally had another caravan park that we grew up in with my two sisters and younger brother. And I'm the only sibling that's jumped in the family business. So we're stuck with it. So we're going into, our 11th year here in Broken Hill.
Fantastic.
And yeah, really over the last 12, 18 months, we've were able to secure the freehold of the business back in the end of 2019. So we've been able to commit and spend a fair bit of money and doing up the park. So it's great to see all the improvements we're making, and the guests love the feedback.
Absolutely.
We love the feedback, and the guests are really enjoying the benefits of the new toilet blocks and the kids' facilities that we're putting in.
Yeah, well, I noticed that. The last time we were here, you didn't have the jumping castle.
No, didn't have any of that. So, you know, we're seeing a fair few people that are coming through with, grandparents are travelling with their kids. You know, they've got two or three vans coming out to Broken Hill in far west New South Wales, and it's four in the region, and they're travelling together, and definitely the kids get worn out pretty quick on that jumping pillow.
Absolutely.
But then, we also know that our traditional market with the grey nomads appreciate the new shower blocks that we've just done up, nice big showers and plenty of room in there. So we're really chipping away at all those touch points that we get feedback about. But it's definitely about making that experience. There's plenty to see, so fill the days in, and then you've got a nice place to come back, and we've got a communal fire that's pretty popular over the winter months. So gets everyone together, which is brilliant.
And you've got the beautiful big camp kitchen there, and you've also got that lovely swimming pool. Is that pool heated or not?
Well, look, it can be heated, in summer with that... It's got the panels on the roof, and it's a bit too hot in summer, so we definitely turn it off. But winter, you're going to get the nice chilly mornings and chilly afternoons, but the sun's up and nice clear skies out here. It's amazing.
Fantastic.
It's an outback like no other here in Broken Hill.
It is indeed. Look, I was talking to Irving before, the easier tour guide, and he drives your bus, takes people all over the place.
Yeah.
So many interesting things to see here in Broken Hill, which I had no idea about.
It's amazing.
It's almost like becoming a mecca. It's a must-see town, isn't it, really?
Yeah, look, I think people underestimate what there is to see here in Broken Hill. Yeah. So, at the beginning of April, we have our Heritage Festival where we'll have people dressed up as old miners. And then, later in the year, come September, we've got the Broken Hill Festival. So there's that mix between the miners that work underground that come up for a drink at the pub, and then you've got that mixing in with the drag queens in their glitter and their heels.
That's right. And of course, at the Palace Hotel.
That's it, at the Palace Hotel. So that's an amazing event that kicks off in September.
Yep.
And that brings close to around about 2,000 people to Broken Hill. And it's a great vibe around town. And that festival is growing year on year. Mm-hmm. And definitely the street parade's a massive event now, so it almost matches our Christmas parade.
Okay.
And you have everyone involved down Argent Street in our main drag.
It's incredible.
But, look, Broken Hill's amazing. Like, we've just had another exciting announcement last week.
Yes.
And that's the Broken Hill Monday Bash.
Absolutely.
That's coming to Broken Hill.
Absolutely. Look, I can't wait for that. I think it's going to put Broken Hill on the map where entertainment's concerned.
I know.
Run by the same people that do the Big Red Bash, but what an incredible lineup.
Oh, it's an amazing lineup. To get that out here in Broken Hill, we're really, really grateful for Greg Donovan and the team that started the Big Red Bash to go, all right, well, that's wrapping up in July, so those people that want to go out there and have a look at Birdsville, travel around far west New South Wales, check out South Australia, and then venture in to Broken Hill for the Monday Bash. And that's kicking off on the 19th of August. So,
correct.
It's going to come around pretty quick, that's for sure.
Well, I know tickets for that are going on sale in...
Yeah, the 23rd of March.
23rd of March.
They go on sale.
And what's going to happen with that is those tickets will be sold on the 23rd of March. I think if you don't get in quick.
I think so. I think they've got such a massive waiting list from the people that missed out at Birdsville, because that's sold out.
It sold out.
Yeah, there's a massive waiting list, I think, at the moment. So hopefully we can get all those people out here to Broken Hill.
I'm sure they can.
The benefit is, we've got all sealed roads out here, so they don't have to worry about, heading off on the dirt tracks and their undercarriage of the vans and bits and pieces.
That's right. And another thing with your caravan park is you also got a courtesy bus that's going to take them into the into Broken Hill, isn't it?
We do. So over the last few years, with all the different events, we realise people are out here to have a great experience. And that's our whole purpose, to create great experiences for our guests every day.
Right.
And part of that is, you know, they're out here to have a holiday and a unique experience. So we understand people are there in like a celebrated mode and they want to have a drink or two and enjoy themselves. So for the Broken Hill Festival and a lot of the other events that are around town, we've got a little Toyota bus that we drive in and out around town, and then we also package it up with tours.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a great atmosphere with all these different events that are happening.
Fantastic.
It's definitely worth people looking at their calendar and trying to book it in.
So, obviously, you're going to have a lot of sites available at the moment. How quickly do you think, like normally, the Broken Hill Festival, when does people start booking for that accommodation-wise?
Yeah, the Broken Hill Festival, we're seeing a lot of people year-on-year book, but we've still got plenty of vacancies and we're making room and we're constantly in the process here of improving the park and building. So we've got an old rugby oval that we've got behind the existing park that we're slowly building and adding more sites onto. So there's always an area to find some extra spots for people and we'll keep growing that. But even with the Monday bash, we reckon we're going to be fairly busy those 3 days prior to the gates opening and then at the end. Everyone, after being out there for 3 days without hot water, I think the shower block's going to be pretty popular if the caravan is out here, that's for sure.
The thing with Monday too is you can get early bird tickets, which means you can get out there a couple of days early. Yeah. You can leave a day later if you want.
That's true. So I believe that the official event kickoff staying on the 19th of August.
Yes.
And then you're allowed to get in 2 days prior.
2 days prior.
So, yeah, you know, look, if anyone's thinking of coming out, we're going to have some packages available where we hope to have, you know, our own little community here post and pre the event. So I think, you know, it's going to be busy mid-August for us.
Absolutely.
Definitely. And then leading to the Broken Hill Festival.
Look, I'm definitely going to be here. So we'll have to talk about getting me a nice spot.
Yeah, okay? I think so.
Okay, and reserving a seat on that bus of yours because, I want to see the festival and I want to see that Broken Hill Festival as well because I've been following that for a little bit now, a couple of years.
Yeah.
And that all came about because they filmed that movie, Priscilla Queen of the Desert, didn't they? That's how it all sort of came about.
Yeah, it all came about that. And I think they were celebrating the 21st birthday of the Priscilla Festival. And that's where it kicked off. So Esther and her team at the Palace Hotel in Broken Hill have done an amazing job.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of people that are behind the event every year.
Yes.
And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And it's a real draw card to get people out to the far west and Broken Hill.
Now, you also own the motel across the road, don't you?
We do, the Stirt Motel. So, you know, being a family business, we were here and we looked across the road. We said, oh, look, that would be great. We're about ready to go get some more cabins. And the relationship, being a country town, you start to get to know everyone. And the lady across there said, oh, look, I'm ready to sell. So we were able to pick that up around about 8 years ago. So we're slowly just chipping away and, you know, getting in when we can and doing up the rooms. But yeah, it's a great little motel on the outskirts of, it's not in the city centre.
No.
But it's ideal for those that are driving out to Broken Hill to have a good look around and on a budget. And they've got like self-contained rooms and the whole lot. So it's a great little setup over there.
Absolutely fantastic. It is. I had a look at that the other day and, look, it seems to me like you've really got everything under control here. I mean, you've got the caravan park, you're going to extend out the back, you said.
Yeah, that's right.
You've got the motel, and you've got a great tour guide, Nerving. He's been here 26 years. There's not much about Broken Hill he doesn't know.
No, so he does an amazing job with tours for just around town, half-day sightseeing tours, even out to like Menindee and Silverton. So we do a whole mix of add-ons.
Yes.
But yeah, definitely, I think it's we've done really well to get an amazing group of people around us to really create great experiences for our guests every day.
That's one of the things that impressed me was how much your staff looked after us when we checked in. Michelle and the young Jess.
And Jess, yeah.
Fantastic crew of people. Really, you should be so proud of them.
Yeah, we're really proud of them. So they do an amazing job.
They are indeed. Mate, thank you so much for your time, Michael. I think we've covered just about everything. Anything else you on the top of your head you want to say before we let you go?
Oh, look, I think definitely you got to schedule a trip to Broken Hill on your list. Get on the bucket list and get out here. We'd love to see you here.
Especially around the Monday and the Broken Hill, not to be missed.
I think, you know, August, September is the time to get out to Broken Hill now, I think.
Absolutely fantastic. All right, mate, before I end up this little chat with you, I'm going to play you a song. It's got to be Aussie.
It's
Broken Hill. You can't get much more Aussie than Broken Hill.
That's right.
Got a favourite Aussie singer?
Oh, look, I think when you look at the lineup that we're going to have for the Broken Hill Monday Bash, the lead artist there is Paul Kelly.
Right.
So I think I'd have to pick him.
Paul Kelly. Not how to make gravy.
No, not how to make gravy. Okay, well. But I think, you know, like, I'd love to be out there at the Broken Hill Monday Bash and see him on stage and hear Before Too Long.
Before Too Long. Are you going to go to the bash?
Yeah, if I can get like the amazing team that we've got here, I might just have to sneak out there for a day or so. Okay, mate.
I'd love to see you out there because I'm definitely going to go. All right, let's stick around, listeners. We're going to play that song for you now. Paul Kelly's
Before Too Long.
Goodness me. Go. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thanks,
Phil. We'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after Paul Kelly. Before Too Long. Welcome back, listeners. I'm Phil C. I'm going to trip out to Silverton. Now, Silverton is a great town, about 20-odd kilometres from Broken Hill. And we are with John Dynan. Now, Jono, Dino to all his buddies, he's an artist here in Broken Hill and he's got his own gallery. How are you today, John?
Good, mate.
Good on you. Yeah. Thanks for having us in in this beautiful gallery of yours.
Yeah, no, it's all right.
Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask you a couple of things, mate. How long have you been a full-time artist?
Nearly 50 years.
Nearly 50 years.
Yeah.
Okay, so where did you come from originally?
Broken Hill.
So you were born in Broken Hill?
Yeah.
And you now live in Silverton?
Oh, no, I not now live in Silverton.
No?
I moved back about 6 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, I was out here 35 years.
Okay.
And then the wife wanted to move to Mildura.
Yep.
Something different.
Mm-hmm.
So we sold up everything we owned, took off to Mildura. Lasted 11 months. she missed the kids and missed Broken Hill. So we sold up in Mildura and come back.
Okay.
And then I bought this little shed off me mate.
Okay.
About 6 years ago.
Right.
But we live back in Broken Hill now.
You're in Broken Hill, which is, as we said at the start of the interview, it's only about 23 kilometres from here.
Yeah, and I love the drive.
So you love the drive? Good. Yeah. Yeah, what about all the bumps? We got like the dips.
That. They kept me awake.
So how many dips is there? Have you counted them?
I think there's about 36 or 36. There used to be about 70.
Oh, okay.
And they fixed all the bad ones up.
Okay.
But you got to know which side to go into the dip.
Okay.
Sometimes you got to go in on the wrong side of the road.
Oh, really?
The left-hand side sort of flat on the other side, okay. And you'll hit it and nearly wrecks your front end.
Okay. So, well, that's something good for the listeners to know, okay? Yeah. Make sure you enter the dips on the right side. Or slow down, unless, of course, you want a thrill ride to Silverton.
No, you don't slow down. You might have the tourist up your backside.
As you can imagine, listeners, Dino, his mates call him Dino, he's a bit of a local character. Now, they tell me that you've got a reputation to hear you. They tell me you're the local mayor. Is there any truth to that, or is this just a bit of a rumour? It's not, obviously you're not the official mayor, but
no, I'm the unofficial mayor, but also I'm the sheriff in the town drunk. And the only thing that we haven't fought over out here is the town drunk.
Okay.
Title.
So. Okay.
So but I usually win it.
You usually win the fight. Crikey. Yeah. Oh, John, I knew this was going to be a fun interview right from the start. Now, a lot of your paintings here, we're in your gallery now, a lot of the paintings are emu related. What's your fascination with the emus?
Well, that's a long story too. I might get you 7 minutes there.
Okay.
I bought two galleries and a house up on the hill.
Okay.
And they were from Peter Brown, and he was actually the emu man.
Right.
Right, in Australia.
Okay.
And then when he sold it to me, I said, do you want to leave your paintings here? So he left his paintings with me.
Yep.
And just over the years, people kept asking me for prints and souvenirs and whatever. And so I rang him up and asked him, would you do souvenirs and prints? And he said, no, I'm not into that. And I won't tell you what he really said.
Okay.
And he said, why don't you paint your own emus? And I said, I wouldn't. I've never looked at painting an emu and I'm not going to.
Okay.
And he said, no, serious. He said, do two heads of an emu.
Right.
Have them poking your head over a back fence, a corrugated iron fence or something.
Yes.
And give it a go. So I did.
Yep.
And then 20 years later, I'm the emu man now.
You're the
emu
man.
So I pinched his title.
Okay.
And he knows about it.
And he doesn't mind?
He don't care. He's happy.
He's not asking you for royalties?
No. And then he's been to my art shows and he stood in front of all my emu paintings with red stickers on them, which it means sold. And then I'd walk up to him and he's shaking his head thinking, look what I've done.
I shouldn't have retired.
And I said, you know, it's your fault. And he said, yeah, I know that. And you told me to paint it. And I said, now I've got a fascination with them myself. So I try to put him in all different, I'll have police, I'll have firefighters, miners, or anyone's trade, I'll put a hat on them.
Okay.
For that trade. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, I noticed you've got a fireman's helmet behind you, which you said you're painting up for a friend.
Yeah.
And you've got a bit of an Australian landscape happening there, and you're going to put a couple of emus on it for the firefighter. A
couple of firefighting emus on there, with the one with the boss's hat and one with the worker's hat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I noticed when we came in, your workshops or your gallery. It's surrounded by bicycles. Now, what's the bicycle thing all about?
Well, that's when I bought the gallery.
Okay.
The bloke that was here collected bikes.
Right.
And then he said, I'll throw all these bikes up the dump. And I said, no, don't do that, because I love junk. And if you went up to my other two galleries on the hill that I used to have, there's junk, sculpted fences, sculpted trees, sculpted everything up there, cars, motorbikes, it works.
Okay.
And I'm starting to do it here too. So, and my whole gallery.
Yes.
I add something to the gallery every day.
Oh, really?
And when the artwork stops on the galleries, the day I'll be dead.
Okay.
Yeah, so, every day.
All right. So Lynn, you might be added to the gallery. Well, I might have to. I might have to leave you out the front.
If she stays here long enough, I'll paint it.
Oh, fantastic stuff! Now, you've also done some landscapes. You've got this. Outside of here, where you've got the bicycles, you've got the car. Yeah. What's that white car all about? Beam me up with a...
The Beamer.
Yeah.
Well, that was actually on one of the bashes.
Uh-huh.
And what happens in that bash, wherever that car conks out, they leave it.
Okay.
As long as the people where they leave it, want it.
Yes.
And they pulled up here, conked out. So they said, well, look, and they told me the story, and I said, oh, yeah, leave it. I said, I've never had a BMW.
Okay. So when did that arrive? How long ago was that?
Oh, that's about 2 years ago.
About 2 years ago, yeah.
But I'm going to end up painting emus on it.
You are?
But I've got to wait till the stickers and all that wear off.
Yeah.
So there's... because they like to get a little bit of publicity.
Of course.
So once that's worn off, I'll just paint emus on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the Volkswagen with no wheels, it's got cans of paint all over it. Was that just, and it's just a massive splash of colour everywhere. Was that just, was that too many beers one night and you just started throwing cans of paint at it?
It probably was. But a mate of mine said, you want an old Volkswagen and he wanted to get rid of it. So I said, bring it out and dump it in there. So part of the sculptured farm.
Part of the sculptured farm.
I'm going to actually keep adding sculptures all out the front. And
okay. So you don't actually do sculpting, though. You're an artist.
No,
so
I get other people to make the big metal sculptures.
Uh-huh.
And I've got a heap out there now, but I'm going to actually fence them all in and have a big sculpture farm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Ned Kelly, you didn't make Ned?
No,
Ned's
my
out
mate
the front.
Made that.
Okay. And what about the toilet? What about the dunny with the ladies sitting
that was,
in?
That was picked up in town from one of my old mates' granddad's old house.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's 130 years old.
130 years old.
The old dunny.
Wow.
And the lady sitting in it, she's about 130 years old too, I think.
Crikey.
Did you see the lady sitting in
there? I saw the lady sitting in there. And now I've got to ask you, we were chatting before we started the interview. You said you hate the heat.
Yeah.
Now, your shed's pretty well, or your gallery, you've got half of it insulated, and the other half's not because you said you want to keep it original.
Yeah.
What makes a person who hates the heat want to live in Broken Hill and work in Silverton?
Well, I haven't always hated the heat.
No.
When I was younger, I
loved the heat
in the summer and everything. But when you get older, it's just gets too hot here.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't like the winter either, so there you go.
There you go. Okay.
I like the in-between.
Yeah. So you don't see yourself sort of retiring somewhere near the coast in the next 6 months or 5 years? Or...
What do you mean? I retired 50 years ago.
Yeah, no, I mean, but getting away from the dust and the flies and, you know, love Broken Hill and Silverton.
No, if we got away from the dust and that, we wouldn't be able to breathe.
No, fair enough.
We breathe the dust. We live on it.
We live on it. Now, Lynn, I'm going to ask you, have you got any questions for John? I see you walking around here, you're taking photographs of everything and... It's a extremely colourful gallery. I've got to tell you that, listeners, and there's emus everywhere.
So you have a fascination with the bright colours, or is that just rubbing off on the whole landscape?
It's just me, I think.
Just
you? I don't know why, but you put me into a paint shop, like a house paint shop.
Yep.
Just the colours make it does something to me.
Oh, right.
I just want to pick them all up and take all the colours home.
Yeah. No, they're nice, bright and vibrant. It's
lovely. I love vibrant colours.
Yeah. And also, too, you mentioned the Amazing Race. So they came through town.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I can't tell you anymore because I'll get sued.
Yep. I understand.
And I can't afford to be sued.
No.
So people have got to keep an eye out and they'll see
your
gallery.
I'm actually waiting on that one because I want to see what it was like. But they actually did it in the gallery and outside the gallery.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so...
Oh, well, there's something to watch out for.
Bit of publicity.
Yeah, very good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, I noticed, just before we wind this up, John, you've got all these colours of yellow splattered all over the floor. Is that your next project in... Yes.
You know how I did that. I told you. I dropped a bit. I was shaking a big tin of yellow paint.
Okay.
And the bloody lid come off and... It went all over me. I painted my whole self and it's all over all my $3,500, $4,000 paintings.
Oh, goodness.
Over me prints, over me cupboards.
I was hoping that we could turn that into something and sell it for $1 million because it looks quite artistic, even though it was an accident.
Yeah, well, the $4,000 painting that the yellow paint splattered on, I'll put that up $1,000 now.
Fair enough, John. All right, my friend. Well, listen, thank you so much for your time. We're going to have to wind this up. But before we do that, I'm going to play you a song. It's got to be Australian.
Yeah.
So who's your favourite Australian artist?
Stephen Rowe.
Stephen Rowe.
Yeah, he actually, he's an ex-Broken Hill boy.
Okay.
And he sings about things that I love and where I grew up.
Okay.
Like in Patton Street out the south. And
Patton Street,
He's a very good singer.
Well, he's got a song called Patton Street, doesn't he?
That's it, and that's the one I would
That's the one you want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and it's all about a street in Broken Hill.
That's it.
Fantastic stuff. And interestingly to note,
Tanya Kernaghan. She sort of gave him his big break, didn't she?
Yeah, he sings a lot with her.
Fantastic.
Yeah, she's been out here heaps of times to Silverton.
Okay.
Yeah, to the music festivals. And,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next time she's out here, John, you have to give me a tip off, okay?
Well, so she'll probably be here for that big bash, I think.
Monday.
Yeah, I'm not sure if she's in it or not.
Well, we're gonna be in that for that. We're going to be down here for that, so that's going to be fantastic. Yeah. All right, John. John Dynan, listeners, from the Dynan Gallery, Dino to his friends. And thank you so much for your time, John.
That's all right.
It's been a pleasure. Listeners, stick around. We're going to play you that song right now, Patton Street by Stephen Rowe.
She came out to the south to play with a good friend. Was out in Patton Street at the top end. And somehow or somewhere we met along the way. And who'd have thought that moment would be still in my heart today. Your smile was so pretty, your eyes were so bright. You could light up my darkness, you lit up my life. And when you first kissed me with innocence of love, I thought you were an angel that was sent from above. Fly, fly away into the great blue sky. And I knew it all along, angels flying too close to home. We moved out to the north, the same street that you live. Went past your place almost every day. I was still a kid. I was hoping that I'd see you standing out in the front. And I wanted that feeling again, that feeling of love. Well, time moved on and I moved away. It must have been 20 years later I saw her one day. Her smile was still pretty, her eyes were still bright. And it brought back those feelings in Patton Street that night. Fly, fly away into the great blue sky. And I knew it all along, angels flying too close to home. From back home saying, did I know a girl named Anne-Marie? She lived on down the road. You used to hang out with her brother for quite a few years. And when I put down that phone, up came the tears. Fly, fly away into the great blue sky. And I knew it all flying too close to home. She came out to the south to play with a good friend. Was out in Patton Street at the top end. And somehow or somewhere we met along the way. And who'd have thought that moment would be still in my heart today.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or RomanOz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.